Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about weird science. Science that really our modern education system, our modern world has really overlooked and forgotten. And you've been with me as I've sort of plunged deep into looking at different philosophers or plunged deep and done a strategy of really going through some of the people that you have a professional knowledge of, an in-depth knowledge of some of the equations or things like that. And as you go deep with me, as I'm doing this podcasting stuff, I discover things. And we sort of discover, it's a mutual discovery journey, we discover sort of aspects and angles that have been overlooked. I have my own attitude and belief on it, but it doesn't really change the fact these are pretty weird, weird things that we're looking at. And as you can see, I'm or hear, I'm doing my cardiac walk as I'm too busy during the day doing various other things, mowing lawns and stuff like that, to get this particular aspect done. Now, it sort of strikes me as a bit of a random event in terms of that I've been sort of educated formally in physics and educated in education, yeah, as for teaching. But the actual thing which kicks me off to really study these things anew from a difference is this rehab aspect of going through reading things, learning to read aloud, coherently, get it organized, but also to recall things, to have the information there. You have to go back and forth and check and cross and remember all various things. And one of the, I suppose the things I can't tell is how well I'm remembering anything or what fraction of things I forget. I say, I'll come and remember this, this and this, and what I actually do remember. I'm fairly content at this point in time. But as I'm sort of exploring the depths of I suppose it's called cognitive decline or things like that, there appears to be, as I look at the methodology of that, I say, oh no, it's not just me, it's, there is a sort of a cognitive decline and a forgetting of important things, and we preferentially forget it for one reason or another, because it's not relevant at the time, but it may be later on significant. And sort of like it's a sort of a localized but also social significance that we forget various things. Now, the first weird thing is Einstein working on a refrigerator with Leonard Salazar. Okay, he's a former student, sort of gets on with Einstein and uses it and works on a refrigerator. And it seems, and so this is a refrigerator, this is something to keep your beer cold. And back then there was the evolution of the refrigerator as we knew it, but it went through a very dangerous phase and blew up and killed people, a family, horrible family in Berlin, died, killed by their fridge. Not fridges aren't as we know it, and fridges aren't weren't using coolants as we've later developed. They were using some pretty ferocious stuff, ferociously high pressure. You can imagine it making a lot of noise, taking a lot of energy and not being particularly cold, but being a marvel. So I think fridges were common in the 50s in Australia, but not that too common before there. So the Germans were living the high life and blowing themselves up with them, and having Einstein come in and save them to make a better fridge. So now what's interesting about it is to sort of understand the basic methodology of a non-mechanical fridge, where you use the fact that when you heat up a mixture, it will separate, and when it's separated, the gas will recondense, allow it to cool, recondense, and chill. That's the absorption. And when it chills, it forms a liquid. The liquid is absorbed by going back into the mixture. So it's pretty interesting stuff. I'm trying to work out the thermodynamic efficiency of that. But it's a sort of a fairly sort of fundamental thing of extracting heat from a system using a process, a heat engine, reverse heat engine. So it's a bit interesting thing about. But the thing about Salazar is that he's the person. Einstein's in his ivory tower. He's out in Germany on the streets, seeing what's happening and looking at things. And he has actually got a relationship with Einstein as sort of the young eyes and ears of the age. And so this fridge person speaks with Einstein and uses Einstein to contact the President of the United States and start up the Manhattan Project. And so Einstein has become a celebrity, in which he has actually become himself mixed up with, his identity has been mixed up with the actual identity, cultural identity. It's sort of like John Wayne and John Wayne, you know. He himself will find it very difficult to think about himself if he has been defined by magazines and pictures and stuff like that. So it's really interesting that you got these two forces coming together. One is the creation of a celebrity, you know, glove puppet, and Salazar coming in, using him. And the second letter of Einstein is also very interesting. And the way that Einstein works is saying, I believe, I don't quite understand, this is here, it surely will happen like this. Now, for the average person saying this in Einstein's letters, which I've done in the past, I think I've done a few quotes from Einstein and stuff like that. That way is means a lot more different. If an average man in the street saying, look, I think it's going to rain on Tuesday, and I think chocolate is going to be the food of the future. You know, I've read a few papers, we just ignore it. But when Einstein says it, he's telling you that it's going to happen, but I'm Einstein and I can't communicate with you, but from my high level down, sort of like a god giving a tip off. And it's this interesting relationship in that Einstein's become a modern god. But I suppose it's interesting for me going along the place in terms of that you I'm sort of questioning myself, why am I researching this aspect? And I'm researching the aspect for a completely random reason. Now, I find this is where I can digress from here. Like, certain reasons I would know why I was researching. There would be a desire to know something, fundamental core desire to know something. Or it would be in the context of a research organisation, or in the context of a social need, or, and it would be fixed here. Here I'm just sort of just freewheeling, doing just general expansive reading and research. And one can see that, sort of you can see at any point the differential between you, the rest of the organisation, the rest of society, and stuff like that. Here, one of the interesting things is that we've got a general appetite for this type of thing, and this is with Discovery Channel or whatever it is. They can bring these things up. David Attenborough can do things up like that, but we still have this restricted appetite. There's a very fixed diet. We're a three meat and veggies intellectual society, and we tune in. Our channels are only tuned in to celebrities, and you can see here that Einstein was a celebrity, and this person was able to use his relationship with Einstein to project forward. Now, if you're someone like myself who's out there who's not connected to celebrities, well, you may as well forget trying to do that particular direction. So, like, I'm very much aware that these are discoveries for me, sort of the Einstein fridge bang explosion. You know, like, someone died in Berlin, and a whole lot of people eventually died through the relationship in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and the world was a very much a different place. These sort of like big concepts driven, I think years, the idea of a culture saying, "Look, I want an atomic bomb," is just incomprehensible. If you think back in the time of Napoleonic times, or people really didn't want a new advanced technology to transform something. We had sort of announced the transformative technology and believed we've almost created a new religion of science, and science has begun delivering to us. So there's that general discovery that I'm doing things differently and turning up things, and something that's very emblematic for me is the fact that I had no idea that the Einstein bar fridge phenomena, which touched Einstein in several ways. It got him back to his patent office days and got him back to the real world that his family was brought up on. His family was building DC devices, and so they went to the populace at Munich. Here's a little DC battery-powered kettle. Here's a battery-powered fan. And people saying, "Hang on, someone's going to hook me up with AC electricity. Your fans don't work. Your things don't work." But it's very much a appliance. So you've got these beautiful things that you weren't aware of in Einstein coming together, which sort of drive towards Einstein the world stage. And what did Einstein produce? I think ultimately you saw production of celebrity. Now, I find it extremely interesting in that Einstein, in this shortened letter, proposed purely just a liaison between groups in society working together, which is a interesting thing. I had read in another article, which I can't see, a more extended stuff, where Einstein set out a more detailed plan for the Manhattan Project. So I just really can't see how that has all come together. It's a pretty amazing thing all up. But coming on here, we encounter a few other things in physics, which I'll talk about. One is the idea, again through Einstein, the Einstein clock pendulum, if you like. And this is a pendulum is a weight in gravity, going back to forward. In your wristwatch, you've got a little, your little wristwatch. If you open them up, you can remember there's a little torsion pendulum. This is a little, a wheel on a spring, and it goes tick tick back and forth. Okay, now it's one of those ones, which is basically Einstein's wristwatch or watch, ticking clock, which links us directly to the quantum world. That is that he has the little torsion pendulum, which is the little disc suspended not by a big spring but by a single wire, so it doesn't take too much to turn, and has the mechanism for it to tick-tock. He gets it to tick-tock with a magnetic field running through, and that flips these particles called the electrons. The electrons respond. You can see them respond by their change in magnetic field. And the amount of push from side to side, which you can calculate, is given by recoil, because these electrons slipping over, there's a certain amount of recoil in the system you have to do because they're spinning. Well, are they actually spinning? Well, it so turns out that the fact that Einstein was wrong, it had a magic number 2, which basically related to the fact that it's not in our dimensions as we understand it, and involves spin. And this was going to be explained with another sort of, imagine Einstein has gone along, set all these spot fires, and this fire has burnt along, creating quantum physics, and quantum physics has started along. Quantum physics then eats up old Einstein, does the special relativity, the relativistic Schrodinger equation, which is, I suppose, independent of the actual speed of the electron going through, contraction, electric fields turn to magnetic fields, that type of stuff, the Milarski four vector of time XYZ gets converted to spin up, spin down, matter and antimatter. I suppose you call it a vector. It's a tensor, I suppose. Existence tensor explains. Now, it's sort of strange that you can't get a mixture of matter and antimatter. You can have spin up and spin down, matter and antimatter. They're independent along those lines. And I suppose the entire aspect of magnetic fields, yes, it's it's the electric field becomes magnetic field, the magnetic field becomes electric field as you it's just a reference frame. Magnetic field and electric field are interchangeable because they're aspects of your special relativistic movement. But at the end of the day, you have this torsion clock, ticking tack, and you can get it to spin back and forth, tick-tock, tick-tock, rather than the actual winding it up. You can actually power it by giving the electrons in it a nudge. And so that's a beautiful thing, and you can actually build one of these things in a school. And how it operates is the spin flips. Beautiful demonstration of quantum mechanics in a school. You just couldn't ask for anything more than that with all that type of stuff. And you can get I have it when kids, I give them a magnet in their hand and they hold up and they can feel the Rentz force chucking them as they put their hand up next to a AC wire. This is a sort of another very hands-on thing. Now, of course, something which isn't hands-on is the reverse of this, that the rotating pendulum will want to produce the magnetic field because of you spin something, you change the energy levels, you'll have certain things like to flip away as you rotate things, and that's called the Barnett effect. So if you get your pendulum and you spin it quite fast, like very fast, like 90,000 revs per minute, so that's very, very fast, and you'll get a billionth of magnetic field, some very small, tiny, truly tiny magnetic field produced. But that is something to absolutely grasp on and celebrate. For me, that's although it was demonstrated at the same time Eddington was observing light bend around the sun, this was someone observing a magnetic field in a rotating object around the same time, but forgotten in the history of these Japanese scientists have then produced some absolute beauty version of that. So that's new to me, and I suppose that's interesting to me in that I've only come across that through this series of weird chain of events, including, which has got me on the operating theatre twice, brain things and recuperation things, being cut off, people not wanting to speak to me, and all that type of palaver. Palaver, I don't know if that's an Australian word or an English word, that type of stuff, but you can't question it. It's, of course, more like you've been pushed out into the broom cupboard, and you look and you can see sort of like hieroglyphs, and sort of, oh, that's, you know, you're set away, and you find these things. This is the natural thing. So there's the Einstein de Haas effect. As the magnetic field gets your little pendulum clock to the pendulum to move, as it engages in flipping the spin, and the spinning electrons, they've got angular momentum and stuff like that. Now, what's really curious is that as you move away from general relativity, if you move general relativity too far, it just starts to fall apart. Not really fall apart. And you go, yes, this is really good. Then you get this sort of side Einstein playing with quantum mechanics and being a right goose, I suppose. But, you know, he was sort of sucked in with the experimentalists, and it's very hard to really pick your way. Experimentalism is actually quite hard. If you're a theoretical physicist, you can just get it wrong. Experimental physics is death by a thousand cuts, as you have to do everything right to get something right and have to explain everything. It's sort of like when it comes your time, you just have to lay everything bare. It's open book. Sort of no secrets. Secrets there. So there's that, and then there's the fridge aspect, which leads on to Einstein and then atomic bombs and all this type of stuff, celebrity stuff like that. Then we come to fridges, and if you said a fridge was no moving part, I would say yes, okay, here's one from the RS catalogue. It's a chip, and I put power in, the top will heat, the bottom will cool, bottom will freeze, and so if I can remove more heat from the top of the chip, the bottom will freeze down. If I stack the chips up in a little Aztec pyramid, I can actually get liquid nitrogen dropping off the end of my chip. It takes several amps of power going through, all fiercely regulated, and it's sort of like setting up a Peltier stack. So Peltier, now, although Peltier's gone for me, and it was years to go, I go up and I open the catalogue a couple of years ago in the Aldi catalogue. Open up, here's a beer Esky cooler, electronic cooler. No compressors, no, it's a Peltier cooler. Cool your beer with you, and you go, oh my god. And of course, the Peltier is something like it's this big flat. So let's go. There's the Peltier effect, the Selbic effect. Yeah, so let's do it. How can I make a battery, Selbic effect, how can I make a battery out of a iron nail, okay, and a match. You know, match a matchbox. How can I make that into a battery? And you could say, oh, I don't have chemical reactions. What you do is you light the match, heat up one end of the nail, and the electrons will rush to the bottom of your nail. Now, the problem is that if you want to actually make an electric circuit there, so essentially, if I want to make a battery, I get a piece of iron or any metal and stick it in a fire, and electrons rush out into your hand. That's okay. Now, the problem is making a circuit out of that is a little bit more difficult. But, you know, this is true that if you had a piece of gold foil on a piece of wire and you heat it up, the foil would start to separate out as electrons are rushed up out the other end. It is true, and it is ultimately thanks to Mr. Einstein and Bose-Einstein statistics. We've got Fermi surfaces, and we can see all this happening. And this is yet another weird type of thing that majority of people who are, I don't know, they're domesticated, they're almost, in terms of the chicken world, they're battery chickens. So they haven't been able to move around too much, and they're obsessed with the pecking order from conditions. Sort of like, it's not wild conditions, they're too close, too many rules, too much is coming along, so they're obsessed with pecking and not obsessed with looking at the blue sky above and working out how to get out of the barnyard. But, yeah, so we've got this, let's start doing it. We've got the Einstein watch, or rotating torsion pendulum, which is in your classic old TikTok wristwatches. It's a torsion pendulum, and this is different from your quartz thing, which is piezoelectric effect of stress, and you can get thermoelectric and all this type of stuff. This is different, and this is metallic as opposed to crystalline. So crystalline is a pretty amazing thing to do anyway, but this is metallic stuff. And so you've got that. Then if I spin up a piece of magnet, any piece of metal in a field, I will create a magnet. So essentially, if you want a very weak magnet, you get a top. A spinning top, and as you plunge that top down, that little tin thing will turn into some degree. And I obviously think it would have to be a ferromagnet. So you've got an iron tin plated top, and you spin it, will go down. You bar mix something, that will create a small magnetic field. There you have it. Of course, you need to set it up to really high speed to see anything at this amazingly high speed. However, what we come across here is the next set of phenomena. If you didn't know that, and as I didn't know, Einstein's frigid-obsessed students pushed him into recommending nuclear war, you probably wouldn't know that. About the Einstein clock, and you probably wouldn't also know about the spinner magnet. But it's just this panorama of things people don't know. So basically, if I stick a bit of metal into a flame, I turn it into a battery. So you say, well, if that is a battery, well, how come you can't make a power source? Oh, that's a very good idea. What I'll do is I'll sandwich a circuit of different metals, which have different battery strengths, and actually drag off the different battery strengths into a hot flame. In fact, a hot flame, which I can do, which will last for 10 years of reasonable heat, That would be plutonium. This is 242, I think. Is it 240? Plutonium 240. That'll be that. And thank you very much. I'll use your excellent idea. I'll write it in a space probe and send it off into deep space. Thank you very much. So that's how deep space probes work. They have a little chunk of this very hot plutonium, which just bubbles away, producing a few X-ray alpha particles. Nothing much. No real bother. It's nice. Sort of domestic power source. You can almost have it in your living room, just heating up your house. But a bit expensive. This is only a few kilograms of it ever made. I mean, ever. I don't know. You'd be lucky if there's 30 kilograms made of this anyway. And 30 kilograms, bear in mind that a kilogram of this would be the weigh the size of a salt shaker. So these are small things, but essentially they're hot for a long time, and we use their sleeping electric power generators. There's some weird people who think they can use this effect to get more energy out of heat, the waste heat of car engines. The effect is actually quite tiny. Provides about 10 watts, which is a sort of a meek mobile phone call, and some neat sort of self-locking phase lock loops allow us to listen way over into deep space to pick up a mobile phone. It obviously needs a big dish, and 60 meters across, and a lot of statistics and error correction, and we can actually download these pictures. Obviously, it's got a slow download link. It takes a couple of hours or so for it to get one image. So, in terms of megabits per second, forget it. You're talking about in the orders of hundreds of bits a second, if you're lucky.
What I've mentioned here is the quantum mechanical effect, where the gas is the actual electrons and the gas equations is determined by the Fermi statistics of being inside a crystal of metal, which is sort of an interesting thing. And as I've said, there's the Peltier thing, which is the cooler, and the thermoelectric thing is if it's cold to hot, using that as a power source. But there's also something called the Thomson effect, which is, so bear in mind, we've got this telemovie view of things, of Einstein coming along and picking out the three or four major things. No, he was spoiled for choice. He was spoiled for choice of things to work out that haven't gone right. And so he picked out the major ones, and then what's happened is we've gone back and we've fixed up the other ones. But what's happened is that we don't tell people that we had these pretty head-scratchingly weird phenomena. Everyone has heard of Lord Kelvin, and the more I read about Lord Kelvin, the more I dislike him. Okay, so his son called Thomson is important, and as he was politically useful to the Tory party because of his conservative, horrible views about Ireland. Doesn't make him a friend of me at all. He was adopted a name from the Kelvin River. So down through Glasgow. So he refused to leave Glasgow because it's got something speaking to him. He was renamed Lord Kelvin after the river. So that's where Kelvin comes from. So it's not just, it's after a man who adopted the name late in life. The whole world is just sort of a mad, mad place. But he had the Thomson effect, which is this thing. And listen to it. So you in a school get an iron bar and get a magnetic field swapping over in time. I think that would be easy enough to do. That's okay. The next thing you can do is you can get a copper rod, and they do have copper rods, because in school you have this typical thing, is I have a Bunsen burner, and I see thermal conductivity of copper rod versus an iron rod. And no explanation, copper is a better thermal conductor because heat travels through it. Now, what is an absolute bugbear is this idea that heat conduction in a metal is just only casually related by some reason we don't understand with conductivity. So if it's electrically conductive like copper or aluminium or silver, it's also thermally conductive. We've got no idea why. Well, in fact, the answer to that's misleading. We do know why. So the thermal conductivity is linked of a metal, is linked to the electrical conductivity. In fact, if you novel the electrical conductivity of iron by adding things to it like chrome or carbon, making it into a steel, it becomes very low conductivity and low low thermal and low electrical conductivity. The two are linked, and linked for a very, very good reason, and something I'm not going to be able to explain in terms of quantum mechanics. All these things, the Peltier effect, the Solbach or thermoelectric effect in thermocouples, it's all quantum mechanics. At the end, it's your Fermi surface and the fluff on your Fermi surface as you increase temperature. So I can't quite describe it here. What I will describe before I head off home on this thing is this simple experiment. So we've got a copper rod, say it's 10 mil diameter and it's 1 meter long. And you do what you typically do is you support it on either end and you put a Bunsen burner on and you have a way of measuring the temperature as you go from left. So as it goes centimeters away from the Bunsen burner. However, if you can possibly do it, let's do this, the Thompson effect. Okay, and this is something which should really seal it in your head once and forever. And so this is a worthwhile thing to do. You get your copper rod and you run 1 amp through it. So you get your school power supply, and generally you can run about 3 amps, a decent power supply, 3 amps through it. That's not going to heat up because it's 1 centimeter thick, so it's not going to heat up. For iron, yes, it might heat up a little bit, and especially if you do the thing that I'm planning to. So you put your Bunsen burner in the very center, and what will happen is that you then heat this up and measure the temperature either side from your Bunsen burner. Okay, so what happens is that it will heat up and it will create a temperature gradient going down. So you don't want something too big because then you won't get any temperature gradient. So you really want it a centimeter. I would recommend 5 mil diameter. Yeah, it's something like that. You get a decent temperature gradient. So you have the Bunsen burner heating up pretty much in the center and you run your current through it. Now, you will observe, you don't have to go to university, you will observe the Thompson effect. That is, that from the direction current, the side upstream from the flame will not heat up as much as the side downstream from the flame. So, the side upstream, the electrons traveling through will pick up heat energy and transfer it to the downstream side, the gradient through it. Now it's you can do the integral of it, taking slices, doing the Selbeck thermopile effect, but it's an effect of the differential effects for different temperatures. So the effect varies as the temperature, so you get a thermopile effect in the same material due to the temperature gradient. So you can actually make yourself a little heat engine with a piece of copper wire and heating up in the center. And so the actual current, the resistance, is so low that 1 amp is going to be about 1 watt compared to putting about 500 watts in the center. So you'll heat up the center, and as you run your temperature probe upstream of the current, it will be one or a few fractions of a degree, sometimes 2 degrees, lower than the other side. So let's try and work this out. Say you've got the a torch, the Bunsen burner, heating away, and it's heating the copper in the very center. So that's a meter long at 50 centimeters. At 30 centimeters, at 50 centimeters, it'll be up, if you're lucky, 300, 400 degrees. By 30 centimeters, it'll be down to 50 degrees either side. Again, if you're lucky, that's picking a number off the air. However, downstream, as you flick on the current and let it stabilize, it's got to take the heat energy out. It's got to take the heat energy from one side and deposit it to the other side. That's the only way it works, fellows, friends, whatever it is. It will take a couple of degrees from the upstream and deposit it to the downstream effect. Now, this is a phenomenon. Now, the debate is, do I want to show it? We don't understand it. We don't explain it. They'll get curious, and we will not be able to close the curiosity. So if I can just please ask you to do some of these basic experiments and have a Peltier there just to observe it. Now, at a later I'll describe the Fermi surfaces. So, Fermi surfaces hold electrons at different energies. And you can do things like something called contact charging. This is one example. So there are all these things which are lost to the modern mind because we're too afraid to explain it to them. You can get two different metals and you can put them, one metal on top of the other, and it will charge as because you have a voltage for those two different metals. This is not an electrochemical thing. This is just two Fermi surfaces touch each other. You polish up some copper and some zinc. You place the two together and you can actually bring up a charge and then touch it to a charge receiver. This is with a little electroscope. It'll bring up, and then you can do it again. You can actually lift off charge this way. A beautiful way to do it. And of course, people seeing it. Now, the interesting thing is that I speak to students afterwards of showing this type of stuff, and they have forgotten it. They'll remember other things, people making a joke in class, they'll remember something falling over, but the actual basic science, which is sort of culturally denied, this is the Thompson effect, the charge, charging, that is just holding two different types of metal together and charging something up, what is it, the Wim Hof machine. People just do not use it because they don't understand it and they want to sanitize the science that they teach. And I've sort of gone along with that, and it's only just that I've had this weird combination, as described before, of having to podcast. And so what you do is you podcast through a certain type of material, and then you go more and more, and then you do a little podcast in there, and you realize that to do a end-to-end podcast, you really have to read a whole section. As you read a whole section, it uncoops. It's sort of like digging on a train and finding yourself, you're doing archaeology. So you're out there doing one thing, and it comes back to do it. So I really am trying to understand how it goes. So let's do a summary. There are things that you can do in a science classroom that will connect you deeply, inextricably with quantum mechanics. One is Einstein's clock pendulum. Is Einstein's ticking clock, and to work out how that's happening. That's one. But another thing is this copper bar and the sweeping the energy from one end to the other with the current. Now, that's something that's very easy to do. You need a current source, a Bunsen burner, a source, and that is extremely worthwhile to do. Contact charging is another aspect to do. So on this, I've finished what I've had to say. I've got a block or so to come home. I'll just put this on the internet and get going. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.